This is the second session of the Building Blocks of Interpersonal Collaboration with Mickey Cashton. Hi, Mickey.
Hi, everyone. As I like to start each time, I would love to hear from a couple of people what you have done since last week, what you have thought about, what you have experimented with, what questions you have about what we did here last time.
Hi, I wasn't able to be on the call, but I did listen to the MP3, and it reminded me that it's okay to share where I'm at as I share what might be typically called constructive criticism, but what I don't consider constructive criticism anymore, I consider it collaboration. And this specific story is that I got a presentation from someone, and I really wasn't enjoying the template they used, the background they used, and yet that's their specialty area. They're from the marketing group. That's their thing. I was really feeling nervous to go back and say, I don't like it. And I thought, wow, if I'm not authentic when I start this conversation, I'm going to come off as upset or angry or whatever, which is not how I was feeling. I was feeling nervous.
Mm-hmm.
So I started the conversation that way. I said, look, I'm just feeling really kind of nervous to share with you that this template isn't, well, it's just a little too dark for me. I was just really hoping for something brighter. And the person shared where they were coming from, what they were thinking. They were looking for mysterious. And I said, well, I was looking for bright innovation. And we decided that she would put together three options for me. And then when we looked at the three options, we figured we'd be able to come closer to something that worked for both of us.
I love it because it really is, I see, an invitation to collaboration in the sense that you're not telling her what to do. And she's not telling you what to do. You are exploring together what is likely to work best. That changes the spirit. Then it exactly brings you together in a different way instead of being at odds with each other. So thank you. That's a really precise and simple story that I'm really enjoying hearing. Thank you. Anyone else? What is something that has happened since last week, experiments and collaboration?
I had a very, for me, hope-inspiring, just a small moment when I was with a colleague with some passion. I was presenting my view for how I think we can help a client. And I somehow sensed that she was not quite sharing my view, and I felt that she perhaps somewhat dismissed it as she was eager to get on. And I was somehow torn between, on the one hand, being efficient and moving on, which I see value in, and on the other hand, presenting my point of view, of presenting something that I felt was important. And I think she listened to me and took it in and shared that, okay, she was perhaps not quite seeing it that way, which made me present, so to say, one more piece of information, and then we decided to move on. And a few minutes later, I just noticed that for me, it was still lingering. And what was new for me was that I said, could I just briefly check something? I just want to check whether somehow my intensity, if that somehow affected you. I'm just concerned that it might be something remaining between us. I know that sometimes when I'm very passionate, I might offend somebody. It was quite new for me that I had the courage. And I think in most other situations, I would have said, no, let's not go there. Let's just be efficient, continue moving on. And I would say it took less than a minute. And she said, no, nothing is lingering. No, no, I just want to move on. And then I felt I had so much more energy to fully say, okay, now I'm fully focused on next topic.
Yeah, I want to say that my overall sense is that the most precious resource that we have, I don't really have a good word to describe it, although I know that everybody knows what it is. It's our internal energy. It's our attention, what we focus on, what we give our life energy to. When we don't have the kind of conversation that you were just telling us about, What happens instead is that throughout the rest of your conversation with her, sometimes for weeks or months later, some part of your vital energy is not available to do the work because it's preoccupied with that thing. Did she have a reaction? Is she still thinking about, you know, that kind of thing? So you are actually less available. I mean, and you actually said this yourself. After having this exchange that lasted less than a minute, you had a surge of energy. It got freed up from the preoccupation. This is one of the ways in which collaboration becomes an efficiency measure, doing collaboration well, because collaboration can also be a nightmare. And for many people, that's their only picture of collaboration, is the nightmare. But what you did is, you know, like, punctured a hole somewhere, drained whatever preoccupation was there, and it's like, poof, now we can fly. Thank you. In both of these stories, I see a similar feature, which is that speaking the part that doesn't get said. In Rhonda's case, it was starting with saying that she was nervous. In Helen's case, it was just bringing up the thing at all. In both of these cases, finding a way to speak the thing that we usually just think, oh, you can't do that in the workplace, that's what opened it up to a more collaborative space. So thank you. Anything else from anyone? Any questions or comments?
Mine is about email. And I'm very guilty of sending off very passionate email, very lengthy email to a whole lot of people, and then getting very concerned when I get ignored. And I think, well, I know what you said was if they receive that with all our busyness, you know, there's not an easy reply, so it gets set aside.
Yeah.
And then I'm building up all sorts of enemy images about being ignored and all the rest of it. So I was waiting at the time to get a reply from these people, and I was really getting disappointed. And so I went back and I wrote a very simple email asking for them to just let me know if there was any interest in what I had presented, and I got an immediate reply, and we're moving on. So thank you, and I'm delighted with it.
So I want to add something about email, and it's something that I have known for about as long as I've known NVC and email both, which I don't remember exactly when that coincided. And that is that in email, as in conversation, we tend not to put a clear request to people. We just say what we have to say and hit send. I still do it. I'm not saying I have graduated from that. It's just that I am aware of it, and I think the proportion of time in which I do it is smaller. Just before this call, I was writing an email to some people about something important to me. And then I started saying, I don't know what I want to hear back from you. I realized if I don't know what I want to hear back, how will they know? What are they, the poor things, going to do? And basically, this is five people that are friends of mine and also colleagues that I told them about a particular decision that I want to make with regards to a group that we are all part of, that I want to leave that group. And they are my friends within that group, so I felt compelled to write to them first. But if I was confused about what I wanted to hear, I was going to create internal chaos for them. So actually, I would say that writing what I wanted to write took me about 2 minutes. The part of figuring out what I wanted to hear back from them took me about double the amount of time of writing everything else. I have a sense more and more that it's the most important thing in an email is to give people a clear signal what you want to hear back. And what I mean by what you want to hear back is not like, I want you to tell me that it's okay for me to do this. That's not what I mean. I mean a question. What question do I want them to answer? And I want to finish this story just to say what I landed on as an example, which is I asked them to tell me if any of them saw a compelling reason for me not to leave the group, then I would like them to tell me that and why. And if they don't see a compelling reason, I just want to know that they don't have a compelling reason so that then I can move forward. Either way, they give me valuable information. So it's not like I'm trying to control the outcome. It's that I'm trying to have an outcome that would be meaningful for me in figuring out my next steps. All right. So at this point, I would like to shift focus to today's topic. And I am having a tiny bit of regret in realizing that when I was preparing the notes for today's class, first of all, that I spaced out and didn't track them and just created them just yesterday. And second is that in my haste, I left a part there that belongs to last week. So the last question and the note are not relevant to what we are doing today. I don't think it's a big deal, but still, I wanted to just name it. So I would like to then say that for me, there is a bit of delicacy about how to walk that line of listening and speaking and listening and speaking so that the listening is in a flow. Because a lot of times, especially people who put some effort into learning NVC over some time, can fall into a trap of doing something that I call knee-jerk empathy. That is exemplified by the following joke, which it's light bulb joke, which I'm sure everybody's heard some. And the NVC light bulb joke is, how many people does it take to change a light bulb? And the answer is, are you feeling frustrated because you have a need for light? Which still makes me laugh even after all this time. And so what I want is for us to be able, when we want to reflect to people that we understand what they're trying to tell us, that it matters to us, that we are affected by it, that we take care to, just as much care as we take to attend to the norms and the culture and the purpose and the context when we speak, even more care in how we listen and how we express our understanding, because it's a less familiar form of expression. That's all I want to say, and somebody wants to say something.
I'm not quite clear on the point of what you were just saying just now. I was wondering if you could clarify a little more.
Yes, I think that there is a particular form in which people who study NVC are trained to express their empathy. And that form, the template of it, sounds like, are you feeling X because you have a need for Y? In my mind, that template doesn't fit very well in the context of a workplace. I want to find more flowing ways to express our understanding. For example, I could start by saying, okay, let me see if I get what you're telling me, which already creates an opening. Is this helping? Is this clarifying?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I guess I was thinking that if you find a different way to say it, if you just use the standard template, then after a while people will be like, are you really paying attention, or are you just like saying the template? I was thinking, like, if you say something in a way that's appropriate to the moment, then that really shows you're paying attention to the situation in front of you.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly.
I was working with a partner. She needed some empathy, which I did pretty quickly. I really appreciate what I learned from the previous courses is enough empathy, just enough.
Yes.
To go ahead.
Yeah, because we have work to do. We're not here to just enjoy each other and heal ourselves and feel good about ourselves and each other. We are here to get some shit done. And that's something that I want to always keep in my awareness. Thank you. All right, so let's now break into small groups. Here are the instructions I want to give you. In the example that you explore, I would like you to go through the reflection questions if you need to, because part of the situation about listening to another person, there are really two parts to it. One is the inner work, removing the obstacles that prevent us from listening. Then the other part is more like the actual doing of it. How do we do it in a way that helps us understand? And how do we do it in a way that we can convey to the other person that we understand? I would like you to divide your work in the group into two parts. First, work on the part that has to do with, are there internal obstacles? And if so, work through to remove them. And then, what do you actually understand matters to this other person relative to who they are as a human being, to who you are as a human being, to your collaboration, and to the shared purpose? Always remember the shared purpose, because, for example, if somebody expressing an upset about something, there are various things going on. Which one of them you're going to try to focus on in terms of how you reflect your understanding would be different depending on what gets prioritized. If you're talking with the primary partner, the, you know, things like needs for care, for dignity, for connection would be very primary. If you are talking about collaborating towards a shared purpose, it would be different. Those needs are still present but may not be the primary ones to focus on. What would give this person a sense that you understand what they are doing and what they are wanting relative to a purpose that you're trying to live out together? So these are the two parts, removing the internal obstacles, then figuring out what is this person saying, what's important, and how do I convey that to them and move forward towards collaboration? All right, then. Let's do 12 minutes. And as always, a minute at the end for you to choose who will represent your group and what do you want to bring to the group. It would be great if we had three different stories to explore. All right, everyone. So let's refocus our attention. And I would love for whoever is available to share from any of the groups, so I will know who to talk with about the different situations you're facing.
Hi, Mickey.
Hi.
The words that were challenging for me to hear, my coworker, who is my supervisor, said to me, are you going to share some of your data tables at the meeting? And then she followed up quickly with a question, and when are you going to print them out? And it's for a meeting that's coming up on Tuesday, and this was yesterday. And I had just come back from a long business trip from midnight on Wednesday night, so I was pretty tired on Thursday at work. It's so funny, you know, it's like when you see it as an observation, people are like, why were you triggered by that?
I mean, it's a beautiful thing because it is one of those things that really show that the reaction is always in response to the meaning we assign to something, not to the thing itself. Always. So what meaning did you assign to this?
So the meaning I assigned to it was, why are you pussyfooting around? Why don't you just be direct and say, will you print out some of your data tables for me to share at the meeting? I'm okay with, like, you know, unilateral decisions, you know, being made at work and I'd rather have that if it's a real unilateral decision rather than trying to, what I'm saying to myself is couch it as a request. So that's what I was hearing.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So but you were hearing something less than full honesty in telling you what to do.
Yes.
Okay.
So then I really thought about it, and I was thinking that she really wants a quality meeting with a lot of good ideas shared, because it's a coalition meeting, so some good ideas shared, and that presenting some data at the beginning would help focus people so it could make it probably more efficient meeting as well, and show people, sort of lay out in data what the concerns are. You know, you can see it with data sometimes. That's what I was thinking she wanted, you know, to sort of like lead off the meeting with that to get everybody like, oh, yeah, okay, we got our work cut out for us. And so when I thought of it that, I was like, okay, you know, I'm on board.
Exactly. That is exactly the beauty of shared purpose. When we focus our attention from this person is na-na-na-na-na and I am na-na-na-na-na to what's the shared purpose here and what are we each contributing, it changes the actual experience inside. It's not idle. You're just showing how that works.
Yeah, for me, I'm just noticing that. I really love this practice, and I'm hoping that, you know, if I can do it every once in a while when I notice I'm triggered again, is that eventually I'll be able to pause for a second and then actually do it inside right in the moment.
Yeah.
Then how I might communicate to this other person my understanding of what they want, I said, I'm hearing that you want to have a quality meeting and that sharing some of the data will help show folks what we're up against and maybe act as a catalyst to a good conversation. Is that about right?
Yeah. And that's the point where you don't know what she would say or not.
Correct. But we'd have a little conversation at that part and then request about printing them out. I would say, today I'm very tired from the trip yesterday and I'm really wanting to go home in the next couple of hours. And right now I have some post-trip follow-up that I need to do. So I don't have the bandwidth to print out the charts today. And then maybe, are you okay with me putting an appointment on my calendar to do the charts first thing Tuesday morning before the meeting?
Yeah, this is, you know, this is like the full cycle of collaboration. I understand what you want from me. Here is the obstacle to my doing it in the way that you want. Here's my alternative. Will the alternative work for you? It's a beautiful full cycle. You see it?
Yeah, I do. I feel like very at ease about having this conversation.
Yeah. And, you know, there's even a step further, because let's say that you're not on board with having the data there. You can still collaborate. You can still say, you know, after this guess, and let's say she says yes, you can still say, you know, I wasn't actually thinking of bringing the data to the meeting because of blah, 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 blah. And I'm hearing that you want it, and I would love for us to talk for another minute or two to look at your considerations and mine and decide together what makes the most sense. You know, I can see the advantage of printing it, and I hope you can see the concerns that I have about it, and let's see what works better. Maybe it will work to print them and share them an hour later. All of this is obviously made up, but you see where I'm going. Just because she's your supervisor and you don't like the way she spoke to you doesn't mean you can't collaborate with her. That's the beauty of it. It doesn't mean putting yourself down or putting her down. It just means staying focused on the shared purpose. So thank you. This feels pretty complete to me. I just want to know if you have any further questions about it or comments?
I feel complete on it as well. Thank you.
All right, then.
I have a sort of a complicated situation that I, very recently in our company, we had a person pass away. And someone who's a volunteer in our industry wrote what he considered to be a piece to honor that person. and that piece was not well received by a couple of members of the now deceased staff member's family. The volunteer who I've worked with for a long time contacted me and asked me to talk with him about it and what my thoughts would be on it. My immediate response was one of concern because it's a really politically charged situation, a really emotionally charged situation. And from our perspective as a company, something that was really personal between the volunteer and the family member who reached out to him and not our work at the association company level. So that was the charge and the challenge for me.
How far did you get to it? Did you get to any clarity inside?
I did. So the very first thing that I did was contact other high-level administrators in my company because of the nature of the situation. It was first something that I didn't feel like I wanted to take on by myself. So
yeah.
I made sure that I communicated out with all of them, and they were very, really grateful because it really was or could have been a very visible and significant conflict. The second thing was for us to gather internally to get some agreement around what our shared message and purpose was going to be, right? They all knew that I had been asked by the volunteer to respond to him, and we also knew that it was very clear from our perspective that we wanted to put distance between what he wrote, not because what he wrote we didn't think was beautiful or well-written or even honoring, but because of the amount of charge that there was around it, and also because we didn't ask him to do it, and it really was a communication that was between him and the family member. So once I was able to create some spaciousness internally by talking to my colleagues, hearing them, and for all of us making sure that we were of one mind about the way it should be handled as an entity, the next step for me was to get back with the volunteer who contacted me and let him know that I would be willing to listen to his concerns and to listen to him because I do care a great deal for him. But I did the little time between his request and my conversation with him was about 36 hours or so just to make sure that I could get some grounding. And then we did. We had that conversation. So at that point, for me, the shared purpose was threefold. One was to reinforce and clarify what our company's relationship was to the conflict that he was in. And the second was to reinforce that we were unified in our belief that his intention hadn't aligned with the impact, right? And that's something that happens to us all the time, right? And that we understood that and we empathized with that. And then the third purpose for me was really to allow him to be able to share with me how hurt he was, how frustrated he was, how misunderstood he felt in the level of response that he had received from the family member, and to ask him and to seek with him what he needed to do to be able to sort of be the best self that I know he wanted to be in responding to the family. So it was just a conversation of listening and hearing and really sharing, honestly, my sadness about what he was going through, as well as trying to connect with him around what his intentions were going to be moving forward.
You know, I want to reflect. There's so much beauty that I'm hearing in the way that you handled this. I want to contrast it with how I think our mainstream culture would have handled it in one of a few ways, none of which would have worked, because I think this one worked for that person in the end and worked for you, right?
Yeah, I could add on one layer of complexity as well. The person who contacted me is white. One of the co-authors of the honoring statement that he wrote was African American, and the family was white. The family member wrote to the volunteer who's white and never mentioned the African American person at all. So they also had feelings that. Throw that in.
Yeah. Common responses to a situation like this One very common one that I want to name is not responding at all. It didn't even obviously cross your mind not to respond to that person, but we all know. We all have been on the receiving end of sending a heartfelt message about something of great importance to us to someone and not hearing anything back. In fact, earlier on this call, we heard about something like this. That's one thing that could have happened. Another thing that could have happened is that out of guilt and confusion and a misplaced sense of responsibility, you could have gotten entangled. That is also something that people do without bringing conscious awareness to what they want to do. And another one is to reach the point of distancing. You know, like you said, having this distance that you want to keep between the company and the person, and translating that distance to the interpersonal level. And then what you would do if you had done that is you would have sent the person an email back saying, I am very sorry that you're going through this. Our company cannot participate in any further conversation about this. I can tell you that some time ago, I got a very impassioned email from someone who was an NVC person in some other country who was working in a company that prided itself on using NVC in their workings within the company. And without any explanation, one day they come and tell her that she's no longer working there, without any explanation. And she was particularly heartbroken because of the fact that this was supposedly an NVC company. And she worked for weeks to create communication back to the people in the company with complete vulnerability and empathy for them, asking to just have dialogue, to be told what was going on. And still, they just repeated, you know, the official line. So you can be an NVC person and do that. I want to highlight what you did that is different that I see as a model. I don't have anything to offer you. I'm saying this only because I know I have a skill at unpacking things for everybody else's learning. The first thing is every step of the way you collaborated. You reached out to other people to get their input into how to respond. You didn't just take their input and said, thank you, now I'm going to decide what to do. You actually sat with them long enough, deep enough, so that you came to a place of shared holding about how you wanted to respond. Which means that at the point of engaging with him, you are not alone. You have a kind of a moral and spiritual authority within you that no doubt gave you strength. Didn't it?
Yes. So I was surprised in my noticings about how calm I felt in the conversation and how easy it was for me to slow the conversation down.
Yeah. Then the most significant piece is that you translated the clarity about the company relationship to this person into a level of shared purpose that you could offer him within the clarity that you could not engage with him in certain ways. You found other ways. In other words, even within the complexity, within the charge, within the difficulty, within the, who knows, political, who sometimes there are even possible legal implications to such things, you found a way to be human. And that is what touches me more than anything in this story. You walked through the entire thing by naming a purpose that had integrity, that had dignity, that had care, and that was completely wrapped within the clarity that you achieved with the other people about your shared holding of what felt right in terms of relating to this person. It's a high accomplishment. because it's all falls under the very large category of saying no with care. You said no to the person, but you gave him your heart, your time, your care, your ideas, a lot of things that were not what he asked for, but that were responsive to his humanity, your humanity, and the purpose of the whole thing. So I'm just sitting here bowing to you and appreciating the opportunity for everyone to see what it looks like when we act with full integrity and in total collaboration. And I want to see if you want to say anything.
Well, I'm clear. I'm so grateful for contextualizing it in a larger frame, Nikki, that really supports our work in NVC. So thank you.
Yeah, because, you know, sometimes there are people who get confused and think that NVC is about being nice.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think of niceness as ultimately dangerous. Dangerous because it prevents truth from flowing in the world. And I want to see if anybody else has any comments or questions about our exchange.
Just short words of gratefulness, because I see just such a huge relevance of what is considered professional. Just so grateful for everything you put words on regarding distancing and this example of how it can be worked out. Thank you.
Yes, I think that this concept professional is one of the kind of like bars in the gate that keeps us imprisoned. There's this aspiration to be professional, and professional is defined in such a way that it prevents humanity from flowing through. If you look at the characteristics of what counts as professional, it's about really killing all the life out of yourself. So thank you.
Yes, I wanted to sort of, again, also express my gratitude and to say that it really helps to clarify that there is a sense, you spoke just now about professionalism, and it is something that I myself have prided in, because I have attached to the word professionalism a sense of fairness and justice. So that professional means that we don't let the kind of emotions that blind us, then I don't let the other emotions that I tend not to want to acknowledge interfere. But always with the intent that this is what being fair and you know, and open to everyone. So it's good to be able to look at that again, to revisit that notion and to say we can be compassionate, be fair, we can be whatever those words mean to us, and especially because when I heard this particular example, you know, because of death involved and pain and friendship and maybe even race, felt so strongly to want to do something. And I do think that the way it was responded to was so much more appropriate for so many different reasons. And I think I will continue to sort of work on it, because I don't have it very clear in my mind. Thank you.
Yeah. I want to take it a step further. I want to say a little bit more about what I mean in terms of professionalism is about essentially not trusting our humanity. When emotions are seen as an obstacle to proper action, we are on the fast slope to, I just followed orders. And Immanuel Kant, who was a philosopher who shaped a lot of things, and one of the main things that he shaped is modern thinking about morality, moral reasoning. Kant goes as far as to say that if I do something that I have an emotion that leads me to do it, even if it is the thing that would align with moral reasoning, it doesn't count as moral. It only counts as moral when I do it because of duty. I don't have the specific quote in front of me, but it's something that I did a lot of reading in this area, you know, years ago when I was working in school on my dissertation. So there is something about seeing emotions as opposed to the possibility of acting well that is the source of danger for me. What I see Caroline as having done is work consciously with the emotions, with other people, with the emotions, with the person, to bring wholeness to a situation that was very difficult. You could not handle that situation without giving attention to what is happening on the human emotional need plane. So thank you for calling that out.
Thank you very much.
Caroline, anything else, or are you complete?
I'm absolutely complete. Thank you all for listening.
Yeah, thank you for speaking it. Really, I want you to consider the possibility, rather than looking at it as thank you all for listening, to take in that in sharing this story you gave people a gift. Thank you. All right. And our third situation.
I'm reeling a little bit because of all that discussion, and so much of it touched me. The Immanuel Kant and also professionalism, that's the big touchstone for me in this organisation that I'm attempting to collaborate with. I belong to a voluntary organisation, service organisation, and it's very aware itself that it needs to become more flexible. It's very structured. It's very bureaucratic. It's been mostly male until a few years ago, and even then there are clubs that only accept males. So, you know, you're up against a few things. Anyway, to refine it down to what we're talking about in our breakout, I'm on a committee now. We're all volunteers. We're all supposedly at the same level. And this new club is not a physical club. We meet on the internet. So it's unusual for this particular big international structure anyway. So we're grappling with setting protocols and whatnot for handling the jobs we have to do. And this committee has been given the role of putting forward a policy, a protocol for handling projects. Now, the projects come from the members. At this very moment, when we've been asked to put forward a protocol, it's to handle three projects that have been put on the table for us to review. Now, they are all very unequal. And, you know, at the background of all this is that I have been up against it in this particular club because my management style as such is inclusive. And the whole background of this club is very inflexible, very professional, they're business people, etc. The thing I've got now is an email between another member of this committee and myself. I am not the chair, but I was a year ago. So it's my influence is being sought in terms of how to get this happening. And in an attempt to make it more equitable in reviewing these people's projects, I've suggested in the email only yesterday that we have the three people on a call together, and two of them are actually on the committee as well. So it was just a matter of asking the third person to be on the call. In my mind, it was making it more fairer for them to hear the review process for each of them. The email I got back from him was, no, we're not going to do that, and they should put forward their best plan and we will find them worthy or not. I'm back in the same position I've been in for many years with these people, and I know your discussions have helped me see that I need to continue to look at the fact that we all have a shared purpose. I'm sure these people want to help these people with their projects, and they want to give the funds from our club if at all possible, but they are being guided by the rules and regulations without the humanity. That's my assessment.
Okay, so you haven't quite yet figured out a way how to reconnect with them, how to respond to this kind of unilateral thing. Am I correct?
Well, I know it has to be done on an individual basis. I'm attempting to, as I've been accused, I'm attempting to change the whole system, but I know I have to just work on the individual level. I am thinking I will ask if we can just have a call between us, the two, the man I was emailing, because he's put forward a draft that he thinks we should use for protocol for reviewing these projects. I've just asked him if we could include the idea of having them on the call. And as I said, he's got back to me to say no. So now I'm thinking I need to ask if he would be willing to have a call just with me, that I acknowledge that we're all on the same page, all wanting to do the right thing for these people. But I would like to talk about strategies and I don't know how to do that myself.
Yeah. So here is the piece that we are looking at. You know, it's kind of lovely when life is arranged in a neat way. We were just looking with Caroline at the beauty of how she essentially said no to this man. And now we're looking at the opposite thing, which is how do you respond to somebody who says no to you? And so one of the things that happens is we tend to take other people's no to be a demand. Because the person says no, that's the end of the deal. There's nothing else that's possible. So I'm now going to do something else. To some extent, you're doing that. I am thinking that there's a different way of framing it. And even the language of could we is reinforcing the idea that he just gets to say yes or no and you have no say. Do you see what I mean?
Yes.
So the message that I would want to convey to this person if I were you is a message that says that it's not working for you. It's not actually going to work for you to not have that conversation that you want to have with these other people. I'm not entirely certain that I understood all the details. I'm not focusing on that right now. What I'm focusing on is you seem to have a conversation with him and a few other people, and he said no. He said no. And he said no without letting you know why, right?
Yes.
For me, that's the beginning of a dialogue rather than the end of a dialogue. Yeah, I am with you that my next step would be to have a conversation with him. I would frame it as the next step in a dialogue rather than, okay, not that, now let me try something else. Subtle. What I can imagine saying, and tell me if you think that might work, is something like this. Hearing that you're saying no to my request to meet with these other people, I imagine that there are some pretty significant reasons why you would say no. And in the absence of knowing them, I'm not feeling settled. I would really love to have a conversation with you and figure out together what's the best way to move forward with this template. Because I know that I would like the input from these other people, and I want to find a way for us to be informed by a wider wisdom than just yours and mine. Are you open to having this conversation, and if so, when? In that frame, I am neither rejecting nor accepting his no. I'm investigating it.
Yes, what I was tending to do was to look at the whole conversation and the whole problem instead of now you've given me the focus on the no so that I can unpack that. Yes, thank you.
Thank you. Anybody has any comments or follow-up or other examples of when somebody says no, this is one of the hardest things to maintain dialogue about, especially when there's a power difference of any kind?
Yes. I mean, you mentioned the power struggle in relationship to hearing a no. I know that my habit has been to say fine, then I'm going to think of another way. So it opens up this possibility. Because I guess ultimately what it does for me is that it says, I trust that this person is willing to consider me in the decision making, which is a hard thing to come to because the story in my head is they don't care what I think, they don't think I'm contributing, they think they know better than I do, and I'm just going to have to move on to something else.
That story is you and at this point probably billions of other people. Mm-hmm. That story is part of what keeps us disempowered.
It does actually feel empowering to sort of shift that paradigm and say, that's just my story. Again, I think I've said it before, it's that when I'm at work, especially when I witness this kind of exchange and then I become part of that exchange, the stories are so powerful and that they're so familiar. I think the language is helping me move to the possibility of saying, I'm not there yet. The no is not about me in that sense. It's not about how I am being perceived.
Yes. The no is, you know, this is one of the core pieces of wisdom that came from Marshall Rosenberg. A no is always a yes to something else. Always. If you can have an inkling of what the person is saying yes to, that gives you an entryway into continued dialogue. If you don't have an inkling about what the yes is, then you just express your understanding that it's there.
What would that sound like?
Yeah, I actually used this as an example with Catherine, but I'm happy to say it again and just a little differently. So if you think you know what the yes is to, you could say, you know, I imagine, I don't know for sure, but I imagine you're saying no because you want to preserve the resources of people in the department. I'm just making it up. Is that why you're saying no? I would like to understand because I want us to be able to work together towards our shared purpose most effectively. So notice that what I'm doing here is two things. One is, I'm conveying to the person my trust that there's a good reason for the no. And the second thing that I'm doing is I am shifting it from being about me getting the outcome that I want to being about we, not I getting what I want, we finding the best path forward in service of the shared purpose. These two bits together allow us to stay in dialogue when there's a no in the air. If I have no idea what the reason is, I can say just that. I can say, you know, I was surprised to hear a no because I thought I provided a good case for why it would serve the department to do this. And I am confident that if you're saying no, you really have some important reasons. It would so help me to understand because if we understand each other's reasons, then we can think creatively about how to make it all work together. That's all. It's not defiant.
Understanding does not mean agreement. It simply means I begin
exactly.
to see from that perspective how that decision or that conclusion was made. It just doesn't mean that I automatically agree because I understand.
Exactly.
When I say that, there's something about the need for agreement and understanding to be together. It makes it difficult for people to believe that I understand when I don't agree.
Anything that we want to make sure the other person hears, we just say it explicitly. So you're not sure, you just say, you know, I want to tell you what I understand might be your reasons for saying no. And in saying them, I just want to be clear. I don't know if I agree or not, and that's not what it's about. I just want to make sure that I understood. Then the confusion is gone. Yeah?
Thank you.
Okay. Then I would say we have a little bit of time left during which we can look at anything related to how we listen and integrate what's important to someone else. This is open season. Anything that you want to ask or say related to this topic?
The situation that I'm dealing with is kind of on the opposite side where someone's asking something of me and it's even potentially something that I want to say yes to, but because of the level of expectation and feeling like I don't even have a choice about or I can't say no without feeling guilty, that it's really difficult for me and I'm kind of stuck in that. I understand where they're coming from, but I'm not sure how to acknowledge that without feeling guilty and afraid and trying to protect myself. So I was just wondering if you have any thoughts on that.
Yes, I do. So first of all, it's kind of hard sometimes to really take it fully in, and yet it is still true. Choice is a purely internal matter. another person cannot take choice away from you. What they can do is make choice harder in the sense of creating potential consequences to what your choice would be that you might not like. But you still are the one who chooses what you will do or not do. Do you get that distinction?
I guess the challenge is I'm afraid of the consequences that they're presenting, that they're afraid of. I'm also afraid of them.
Yeah. So it's fear that is limiting your sense of choice. And that's really an important discovery. So if you want to have full choice, you need to work with the fear. And the most powerful way that I know to work with fear is to imagine the worst possible scenario of what might happen and imagine how you survive that scenario, including even in extreme situations, how you survive the possibility of dying spiritually. Obviously, no one physically survives
dead,
but there is a way of surviving the knowledge that you're going to be killed that many people have done. You know, many people have walked straight into a situation that they knew would kill them for any number of reasons and done it with full choice. That is a way of getting to the other end of fear. You accept the potential consequences and see how you can survive them. That gives you inner strength. You can imagine that?
Yeah, there's also the side of the person that's asking of something of me is someone that I care about. So there's also that wanting to help them, but also needing to take care of my own needs and trying to figure out how that's possible.
Yeah, the key is to know that if I am not able internally to imagine saying no to something, then I cannot really trust my choice to say yes. And it may be that this is where you are. It may be that you can't say no. Then what you can bring to it is a quality of tenderness, a kind of gentle acceptance that this is where you are in your being as a human. And then you don't fight with yourself. Then you just accept, this is my current limitation. Within this current limitation, what can I choose? At least it releases resentment because it comes from full acceptance and awareness of the situation. Am I making sense to you?
Yeah, I guess I was thinking, you know, you bring that tenderness in, but then do you still say no to the other, or do you say yes to the person and just try to accept that that's where you're at and
make the best
of the situation?
That's what I mean, is to come to a place of mourning my limitation and saying to myself, I might have reached a yes through other means, and I don't currently have the inner strength to pursue the path of mastering the fear. It's just beyond me. So here I am, feeling compelled to say yes, even though I don't want to. That is the best I can do. You're still then taking full responsibility for the choice instead of somehow blaming the other person for forcing you. You feel it?
Yeah. The funny thing is that I'm pretty sure I want to say yes. It's just that I don't want to say yes because I can't say no.
Exactly. Exactly. And you need to find out what the truth is about yourself and act from there. That is like one of the deepest spiritual lessons anywhere, at home, with ourselves, at work, in the world at large, anywhere, that I can only act with integrity to what is true within me. If I try to be someone that I'm not actually going to act with integrity. Okay?
Yep. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm having a meeting tonight. I'm in a restorative circle.
Mm-hmm. And it's on racial equity, and I'm the only person of color that's going. And actually, it was brought up by somebody that was fired for the circle in an organization that I really care about. I noticed who's going to be there is the executive director and the person that was fired and the volunteers that probably are wanting to support the person that was fired that do not understand about racial equity, and this is about racial equity, and the people of color have decided not to come. I was initially invited as a stand-in. I'm still going to go. I guess I just want to have some, I was asking the person that was doing the pre-circle, you know, what is the purpose of this if even the people of color are not going to go, because that's a big statement. I don't know. Do you just have some word to say? I do want to go, actually, because I want to share some things. But I think partly the whole part about the common purpose is like, why are we there?
Yeah. So I think the thing that is coming to me most strongly is that I want you to kind of like really investigate this clear energy that says I want to go.
Mm-hmm.
So that you can find your purpose. You're following some intuitive calling. It's very clear. But it's not clear what it is.
The part that's been missing in the organization is the racial equity part.
Yeah. So then your purpose is to support the organization in becoming whole and just. That would be your purpose then, which is a very different purpose from, you know, kind of like a narrower form of calling people out or making sure certain things are said. Do you see the subtle difference?
Mm-hmm.
That's, I think, a way that you can walk into that room holding the whole on their behalf if they're not seeing it. Am I making any sense to you?
Yeah.
I'm actually very moved by this image of you holding something big on behalf of the whole, even if no one else is able to see it or hold it. Because the people of color are not holding it with you. They're making a statement by not coming. I'm not criticizing them. But their statement, as I see it, is not holding the whole in that moment.
Yeah, and because I called one of them today, their reason for not coming was that they didn't have confidence. That even beginning with the pre-circle, usually a restorative circle is about restoring relationship, and it's about justice, and the way that they wanted the pre-circle at a certain time, and it wasn't at a time that could be done, and they said they couldn't do the circle at this time because they're just so buried with work, and they weren't emotionally ready. So
yeah.
It just seemed like even that was a white timeline. So they didn't have any confidence that they could be heard. And also, too, it was more for, because they saw the purpose as the healing for a white woman who couldn't hear them in the first place, then they didn't feel like they needed to give up. Not that they needed to, but, you know, it's a Friday night, and they're working this weekend for another project.
And
so,
you are called to go. You are called to go nonetheless. So I'm seeing you, and I'm glad that I have a visual image of you that I can hold as being this, you know, kind of like amazing source of strength that at one and the same time says kind of a big no. No, I won't let this happen without these voices being included, because it's part of what needs to happen for there to be wholeness. I won't let it happen without. And at the same time saying, yes, I am here with a willingness to trust that a wholesome outcome is possible. That's what I'm seeing.
Mm.
I'm hoping it's inspiring.
Thank you. Yeah, I guess what's difficult for me in this situation is like, maybe it's my own listening or, you know, they're listening, but I think it's with people that are the most difficult in understanding their part or even seeing, I don't know how else to say it, but their whiteness, you know, the way they take space.
Janice, I'm feeling a bit unsure what to do in this moment. It's already 2 o'clock. Caroline wants to say something, and I really want to hear it. And then ordinarily I would say I would stay on the line and continue talking with you. I feel honored that this is coming up and you trust me to have this conversation with me. And I have another appointment, so all this is coming together.
Yes.
So I'm wondering if it's okay with you to just sit to see what you can receive from what has already happened. One more line from Carolyn, and then...
I just want to say, too, that you've eased me quite a bit already, so thank you.
Oh, thank you. Glad. Caroline.
So thank you, Mickey. So I want to say, to as a woman of color who has been in situations like that and walks into them more regularly than I even care to admit, I would love it if you feel at all inclined to contact me. I'd love to be able to continue this conversation with you after you go through this. But for the whole group, what I really want to say is that what you're doing is a complicated and difficult thing, and so that the whole that you're holding is extraordinary generosity to a group that is in a context that's fragmented sometimes. And so even as you're doing this, people don't recognize what you're doing. And for those reasons and more, it's so important to have folks that you can talk to so that you can be renewed and refreshed in doing this. And the other thing that I want to say is that I think from the people of color's perspective who are not planning to be there, there's a different whole, right? So there's maybe not just one whole, you know, I think that there are concentric circles in these things that are happening that would be helpful for us to explore at some point in our work at NVC.
I would love to talk with you. Thank you.
I am going to connect you, the two of you,
okay,
because I can. And thank you. Thank you, everyone. I'm very touched and moved by all that happened today. Bye-bye.